This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
Welcome back to the Monday evening edition of Power Business. We're together until 8 p.m. My name is Kaya Sithole. Last year in April 2020, the President of the Republic comes out and says after deliberations involving the social partners and cabinet, the government had decided to extend some form of relief support to different sectors of society to tide them through the hard lockdowns of the COVID-19 pandemic. And I specifically remember in that conversation, the number of 500 billion rand seemed to have been the anchor point of that presentation. And since then, there's been questions asked about what happened to the 500 billion rand. Now, of course, the biggest problem is that sometimes the quest for optics tends to supersede the common sense, because if you now look at it, it may well turn out that the president should have never mentioned the number of 500 billion rand to begin with, because let's face it, it just turns out that there was no 500 billion rand to begin with. However, somebody has been hard at work doing the research, finding out exactly what was the number to begin with, and that is Busi Sibego, who is from the Institute for Economic Justice, who released a research paper that has firstly asked the question of how much money was there to begin with. Busi Sibego, let us start with that big question. Did we ever have 500 billion rand to begin with?
The short answer is no. So there was never 500 billion rand cash that was pumped into our economy. And we estimated at the time, which was, you know, obviously last year, that actually the new expenditure from the fiscus, right, from the budget, was about 36 billion. And that's excluding the, you know, the debt servicing costs. So new money was probably about 45 billion. And some of it was obviously for debt servicing. So actually, how much money was being pumped in real cash from the budget was 36 billion towards expenditure on the other sectors. But I think it's important for people to understand that the reason why we make this argument is because, for example, when you look at the 200 billion, it is a loan guarantee, you know, facility. So it means that, you know, businesses have to apply for a loan from the banks. And so about 18% of that has been used. So about 18% of the 200 billion has actually been accessed by businesses to be able to help them out. But this money, the 200 billion, it wasn't like government gave the bank 200 billion to give to businesses. It's that they made an allowance for banks to be able to loan that money. But now the difference is this, is that government is actually the guarantor of those loans. So if all these businesses don't pay the money back, then government themselves, you know, it'll be absorbed into the fiscus. So that's one of the examples. But the other example is that there was 100 billion that was allocated to, or not allocated, that was announced for job creation and protection. But when we came to the actual budget, only a proportion of that or a portion of that was actually allocated. And so I think what is important to acknowledge here is that the announcement versus what the allocations were, and as well as what are the budget, you know, elements of it, is different, which is why we've argued that there was never 500 billion to begin with.
0861-987-000 if you'd like to join this conversation with Busi Sibego. She's from the Institute for Economic Justice, unpacking the question of whether there was ever 500 billion rand to begin with, and more importantly, whatever other amount that was there was, what exactly happened to it? And we've worked out from what you've said, Busi, that 500 billion rand was never the amount to begin with, so I'd like to put it back to you. If that was not the case, how did this then become the public narrative? How did this become the story that we've carried for the better part of the past 12 to 13 months?
Yeah, so I mean, we know that the president announced, you know, a 500 billion relief package. And so that was obviously picked up by many media houses. And in fact, South Africa, you know, sort of put itself as the country. And in fact, many people have written about this. South Africa had the largest announced rescue package on the whole of the African continent. You know, it was quite comparative and larger than a lot of emerging market responses. It was 10% of GDP. And obviously, this is feel-good news. So it kind of really circulated. But by the time we got to the supplementary budget and we began to do this analysis, then we realized that, you know, there was no 500 billion. And I mean, even when it was announced, you know, civil society organizations were already flagging that, you know, most of these amounts were actually not from the fiscus itself or from government spending. I mean, we know that UIF money is contributions made by workers, you know? So it isn't necessarily that government is giving people this money. It's that people have made, have made contributions over time. So it's an off-budget expenditure, so to speak. And so, yeah, so I think it really gained traction because it was just, you know, so large, so progressive, so promising. But actually, in the end, it really wasn't that.
The 10% of GDP number was actually one of the reference points that was used in multiple levels of government communication. So I don't think the president can now claim that he was unaware of that number. So the big question is, did he lie?
Yes, I mean, we've said that, you know, actually, this is the thing. So the estimated relief package itself was supposed to be 10% of GDP. But then what essentially happened is that it became reduced significantly, right? So let's look at that 100 billion. You can announce that the package is as large as you want. But if your budget allocation is not corresponding with your announcement, you've already reduced a significant portion of the response itself. You can't say that, you know, 100 billion of the 500 billion is for emergency rescue and then turn around and say we're going to spend this in the medium term. That is not an emergency rescue package, right? That is expenditure that's for the future. It could happen. It could not happen. You know, we know last year only 12.6 billion of it was actually allocated and used. And so, again, it's this question of transparency around what is actually announced, what actually translates into the budget, and therefore what are the impacts therefore, you know?
The president has claimed to be misled before, famously in parliament, when Musi Maimane raised a particular question and the response eventually gravitated towards the concept of being misled. Could he argue in this case that he was misled into believing that the number would eventually be 500 billion rand, provided A, B, C and X did materialize? Could he then come back and say, well, actually, at the point in time when I said 500 billion rand, this is what I thought was going to happen. And unfortunately, some bottlenecks emerged, some hurdles emerged, so I cannot be held accountable for why we never got there. Would that be a valid proposition?
I mean, the critical question that we should be asking, and it's not the first time that this has happened, where there's an announcement by the president and the budget translation is different. So actually the political economy question is, you know, what happens between the president's announcements and actually what the National Treasury ultimately decides, you know, what the budget should be. And I'll give an example. It's sort of that budget allocation that was announced or the continuous budget announcements that have been made as a way to tackle, you know, gender-based violence and femicide. So president announced 1 billion will go towards fighting GBVF. And then we go to the budget and essentially what happens is that there's no new 1 billion rand that's allocated to this, right? And then we ask, where's the 1 billion? And then National Treasury says to us, well, it's been absorbed or it's been reallocated from various projects. So it's basically already existing in the budget. That is not new money. There's a miscommunication between this assumption that or announcement that there'll be these new funds and then National Treasury reallocating or, you know, balancing the budget to basically, what do you call it, implement, so to speak.
But Musi, I mean, this was not an overnight decision. It wasn't like the president heard that there was a lockdown and then stood on the podium the day after and said 500 billion. This was as a result of deliberations and consultations. And of course, National Treasury would not have been absent from that particular conversation. So again, I ask, how did then end up with this disconnect where it turns out that by the time we get to October and the finance minister tables his budget, it actually just doesn't reflect the 500 billion rand conversation that the president spoken about? How can that be?
Beats me too. But I do think that there's other things that we can pick up from here, which is sort of, you know, some parts of the package, let's say the 70 billion that was supposed to be in tax relief, right? So obviously that is not money that is going to be spent. That is just relief that businesses are going to ask for and therefore not pay taxes for that particular area. There was a really low uptake of that last year. Only 41.2 billion of that, you know, tax relief has actually been utilized. And so in that regard, the president could say, look, we made 70 billion, or we estimated that businesses would need relief up to 70 billion, but actually businesses did not, apply for relief and so forth. And then we can go into a discussion about why is it that businesses weren't asking for relief? You know, what was actually happening? And with the loan guarantee scheme, for example, we know that it was only 18% of the 200 billion because initially the rules, or rather the criteria to actually qualify was just so stringent that businesses weren't able to access the loan guarantee scheme itself. I mean, you can ask yourself, was that by design? Was it that it was announced as a package, but actually, you know, the intention wasn't that people wouldn't fully utilize it? You know, that's also another question we could ask. So those are sort of the areas that, you know, are kind of gray, not so black and white, because the facility was made available and then for various reasons, you know,
just didn't materialize.
Yeah, exactly.
0861-987-000 if you'd like to join us in this conversation. That's the line to call. Nick from Pretoria is already on that bandwagon. Good evening, Nick.
Good evening, how are you?
All good, brother.
I'm okay. I just wanted to comment that Toto Sekwali came out and he said money for COVID-19 was routed, and that money got lost. Then the taxi department were supposed to receive 5 billion, and that money was never given to them. And government never came out to apologize for inconveniencing people for not being honest. Seem like when they make mistakes, they don't come back to the public to apologize for the wrong mistake. So they cover it up. And that's why people, they get angry. The taxis were striking. The government employees are striking for better salaries. So it seemed like money was deviated to other sectors without people being notified. So I don't know if it's... Because Toto Sekwali came out and he said money for convict was donated to South Africa. And it was never given to the departments that we were supposed to go to.
Okay, thank you, Nick. I suppose the Tokyo story is a bit complicated because you're speaking about a number of quadrillions that we'd never heard of before. We've got Hebron from Johannesburg CBD. Good evening, Hebron.
Hey, good evening, Kaya, and good evening to your guest and the listeners at Power FM.
Yebo.
Look, I just have one simple question. Given the responses to the questions that you've been asking about the Solidarity Fund, based on the amount of money that was contributed to that particular fund last year on March. I have one simple question given what transpired in Durban and in Johannesburg recently.
Yeah.
Should the people of this country continue to contribute their hand and money into that Solidarity Fund, or should they perhaps maybe have a separate type of a fund that can be able to help the communities that are currently devastated as a result of what transpired?
Okay, thank you very much. That is Hebron from the CBD. Busi, any reflections on our two calls?
Yeah, I think the first one around, the money, I think there are real genuine concerns around corruption and misspend. I mean, the Auditor General's report, the third special report, because they've been running these continuous reports on COVID expenditure, estimates that about 26 billion was spent through means non-compliant with supply management legislation. And of course, obviously, the Auditor General is looking at, you know, expenditure that they can track, right? So they're not looking at the loan guarantee scheme, you know, UIF per se. They'll be looking more at the expenditure by municipalities, Department of Health and so forth. So there are concerns around money that has not been used in the way that it should have been. And we know this, we read the news, we see that there are hospitals without PPEs. We know that, for example, that the Gauteng provincial government paid way more in beds for hospitals than they should have, just because, you know, the amounts were just so upticked, so to speak. And so, yeah, certainly I think, you know, the corruption and the misspend is something to flag here. And, you know, we wrote a report, and as much as we flag this issue, it probably does not cover all the misspend that has happened. But also some of this misspend might actually end up being legitimate, right? Because as you would know, Kaya, the auditing cycle in itself is not, you know, you might come to a municipality today and say, provide a receipt. They don't necessarily have a receipt now because the person hasn't complied, but then they might have it a month from now, right? So that's one thing. But in terms of the Solidarity Fund, I haven't necessarily heard much about what they are doing to respond to the current crisis. Of course, that facility was made. I know that they did make significant contributions last year with regards to food parcels. But generally, I think there hasn't been enough communication or public, public information around the Solidarity Fund and what is happening with it as we stand currently.
Yeah. Bosi, the trigger point for this entire conversation was the fact that the government acknowledged that under hard lockdown conditions, everybody needed a form of support in one way or another. That was the condition in April 2020. We're now in the third wave where essentially we're living under similar conditions. Level 4 is as close as you're going to get to level 5. My question is, if we are now repeating the same conditions that we're in, shouldn't we then be hearing about a similar model, even if the numbers may hopefully be more accurate this time?
Absolutely. I mean, we've called time and time again to say that, you know, the crisis is not over. You know, there'll be no recovery without rescue. That in fact, over the last year, what should have been happening is that we should have been adjusting as, you know, more rescue measures are needed. We know now it's a year in, there are vulnerabilities in our economy that are now more visible than were before. We've got the data, the GDP stats on the sectors, on workers, on households. We know that more people are going hungry. We know that in ECD centers, there are less children going to these centers. We know that many children suffered from not having access to the school nutrition program. You know, we know that unemployment has increased and therefore workers need relief. We know that businesses haven't bounced back, right? And so we've been calling for, you know, emergency rescue measures. And in our second policy brief, we really focus on lockdown level 4. And we say, you know, government actually needs to spend about 70 billion over the next 3 months. And this is real 70 billion, not, you know, the fake 500 billion, but real 70 billion to really support workers, households and businesses to kind of just to survive in the next few months. And our argument has always been that it's easier to resuscitate the economy, you know, now than to resuscitate a dead economy, right? So what we have to do is, yes, our economy is flawed as it stands, but what we need to do is to save the economy that we have for now.
Well, you have said, as the Institute of Economic Justice, that there actually can be a blueprint or a master plan on what needs to be done. 10 steps or 10 policy steps and 70 billion rand is how you've costed it. Tell us how you got there.
Yeah, so we basically, initially our first policy brief, what we did was a systematic analysis of the impacts that we see on sectors, what we see on workers, you know, who lost jobs, and you see in certain sectors it's disproportionately women. We looked at the SRD, as you know, caregivers were excluded even when it was still available. We looked at all the measures that had existed and sort of, you know, what were the needs. We assessed, we said, you know, 100 billion was put here, but then actually more is needed. And so in our recommendations, we really do consider this full view type of thing, which is to say that, you know, we need to have targeted sectoral relief, right? So we're not saying every business everywhere, despite of their current standing, deserves money per se, but we're saying that there needs to be targeted sector specific grant programs. And the reason why we say that there needs to be grant programs is because, you know, businesses indicated, some of them, right, that it's actually the indebtedness that they're avoiding, and that's why they haven't utilized the loan guarantee scheme, for example. So that's one of the things we propose further tax relief measures. We talk about maintaining employment through wage supports via the TERS, which has existed before. So we're really focused on existing measures and how to extend that, right? Because we're not trying to create new out of the blue, you know, solutions that require new institutions to be built, right? We've seen how our government has fared. And so we don't necessarily interested in like new blueprint type of things, but to say, how do we extend the existing infrastructure to support? We also look at the care economy, which is something the Institute is very much interested about, particularly the burden on women. And so we really advocate for the ECD center grants to be opened again, to be expanded, and in fact, increased the amounts to support those centers. We also look at, you know, extending the school nutrition program. And also the informal sector is one of the areas that we focus on. But of course, as we know, the vaccine program is critical. So one of the things we advocated for before it was even announced was sort of the extension into weekends, how do we vaccinate or increase vaccinations during the weekend and what that would cost to have, you know, medical personnel working over the weekend, because we know our current structure is overstretched and overburdened. So you can't expect that the same people who are working hours and hours and hours to come back and work on weekends. And I think just, yeah, there's other things as well, but to say that we also advocate for an expansion of the presidential employment stimulus program, which has shown to be, you know, part successful. And so we believe that, you know, part of the ways in which we can expand employment in this current context is to expand investments into this. But this is a short-term plan. And of course, our bigger fight is that, you know, there needs to be an end to austerity, which is the cutting of budgets more generally. So keen to hear what the medium-term budget, you know, policy statement will say with regards to responding to the current moment and the budget going forward.
A simple question for you, Busi. Is the basic income grant then the way to go?
Absolutely. We've been advocating for this, and a number of civil society organizations have been advocating for this for a very long time. I mean, the universal basic income grant entered the South African conversation in 2002, 2003 already. The ANC was particularly on board with this. And in fact, back then already, they argued that if everybody got 100 rand per month, you know, you could reduce poverty by 76%. And it was such a big, you know, thing, right? And it, of course, this conversation has died down. But of course, as we are in this crisis in South Africa, where we know that poverty, the upper bound, people falling below the upper bound poverty line has increased significantly. And it's not just from COVID crisis, it's been increasing for a while. But to say that people need to have their right to dignity, people have to have the right, you know, to basic goods, you know, to be able to afford their basic consumption basket. And so we've been making this argument for a long time. But there's also strong economic arguments for it. You know, people sometimes think of, you know, grants as sort of just sort of handouts. But that's not how it works. Our country really has a big demand problem because we're poor. We can't afford to purchase goods, which means, you know, the production, as you can imagine, the size of the economy is also dependent on the ability to consume. And so one thing we've argued is that we need demand boosts. It's important, you know, that people have some money to spend in the economy. And it's particularly important, for example, for informal businesses, right, and townships, township economies, that people are able to actually consume the goods that are provisioned and rather produced and sold.
Busi, the one obvious question that you knew was coming, if it was not 500 billion rand, what exactly was the number?
So, yeah, so we estimate that about 202 billion has been utilized. So that's about 41% of the 500 billion, yes.
Okay.
Yeah, and that's obviously not, we haven't subtracted corruption out of this. So I'm sure.
Oh, boy, you're creating a new dimension there. But thank you very much, Busi Sibego from the Institute of Economic Justice. It was never 500 billion rand. The answer is much closer to 207 billion rand. That is what happened.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.